CliffCentral.com.
Yes, that 80s show, if that's your thing. And by the way, a lot of people asking why we have this this break in the show at 7 and we don't just carry on through. We need to, when we do the podcasts, we need to separate hour 1 and 2. It just makes it easier for people. It's the way we've done from the beginning, and people like to kind of separate the two, so we have to create a break. It sounds really stupid, but I have to explain that to some people. Sometimes we'll play a promo or something. Sometimes we'll throw some client stuff in there, but normally it's just like a break so we can create the new podcast. All right. I've got to ask, Gareth,
the 80s show has been going on for a very, very long time. I mean, how many times can you play Come On, Arlene? What else? Are they going into 80s, like, the scandals? Do they talk about 80s fashion?
You must hear, like, they actually get... They've got such interesting guests, people who used to be a big deal. I'm not going to name any of them now, but if you ask, like, what has happened to, you know, Kim Wilde from We're the Kids in America, well, they've probably interviewed her because she's available now. She's got fuck all to do. No one's asking for Kim Wilde except for the 80s show. So it's cool that they can do this because... I mean, who did they talk to the other day? Chesney Hawkes, I think they spoke to.
Wow.
Remember, I am the one and only. It was like a one-hit wonder for that guy. And I don't think anyone's thought about Chesney Hawkes for the last 30 years. And then that 80s show comes along, and they're like, hi, Chesney. Oh, my God, I'm so glad you called. No one's called me in like 40 years.
I haven't done an interview in 33 years. That's amazing.
And he's like, wow. This is so great. And then they become like really good friends with Barrett and Dory and company. Like they're all in a chat group together. And then there's all these 80s icons. People I used to think, wow, they are so cool. They're the most famous people in the world. Now they're like having conversations with people on my staff. It's ridiculous. anyway, it's nice. It's a good show. You got to listen to it. And I mean, I'm an 80s music fan, so... It's not the only thing I listen to, thank God, but there's some really good shit there. All right, so things to talk about this morning, and this is something Ben wanted to introduce to the conversation, so I'm going to let him explain it to us. Just how did book banning become a thing that you were interested in? Where did you start like finding information out about this? Do you watch a YouTube video or something?
Well, no, I think it all started with that whole DeSantis, Senator... talking about how
governor
there was
Florida.
A whole banning of the governor of Florida. He was taking this whole thing about like kids are being groomed by pedos and starring teachers and stuff.
Yes.
And it kind of actually, I kind of sort of rolled from there, but a lot of the Republican states in America are banning books. Mm-hmm. And I always thought like, you know, obviously when it comes to like sanity, the Republicans are the only ones that still have some. Mm. And then I started seeing all these book bans. It's like, okay, so you guys are all fucking loony no matter which side you look at it.
Yep.
But a lot of the books that are getting banned are all sort of like LGBTQ.
Yeah, don't even try and get it right. No.
Alphabets. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the books are based around that kind of stuff and based around people writing about racism. So people who are getting banned are mostly black male authors and gay authors.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So then if you look at it from there, then it goes back to this whole conservative belief that you shouldn't be listening to people like that. And they're getting banned essentially from schools, from what the things that I looked at. So essentially, people don't want to go to school. Republican senators, and Texas is the biggest state, they've banned over 1,000 books.
Wow.
Who the fuck's got time to ban over 1,000 books? But what they're doing is they're saying that they don't want this filth, this pornography, to be in the libraries of young, impressionable learners.
I think
there's a couple of questions there. There's a couple of questions there because, in theory, good conservative values would look at that and go, yeah, why must they be reading about things that they probably shouldn't have to know about at a young age? I totally get that. But then there's also the whole, like, again, like, is there a tribunal that's been put together where it's like, how gay can you go until you've hit the roof? Right. Or like, how much racism?
Let me just go straight to what bothers me about this. Is this is all pointless. Like, if a kid has access to the internet, what are you doing banning books?
Yes, this is exactly...
It's not the 1930s.
This is exactly where I want to go with this.
You think that this is the 1930s where the kid has to go to the local library to find out about anal sex? Kids are going on the internet now on their phones, which the parents are paying for, and they're looking for all the freaky shit they could find, and their friends are telling them, hey, did you see this YouTube video, and it leads you onto this site, and then you can get this hardcore porn. I mean, that's the thing they should be on about. Banning a book from a library,
yes,
is like telling people, you know, we're going to ban shoes because people are running too much. You could still run without shoes. In this case, you could still find all the porn and the filth that you shouldn't find at the age of 11 without having to go to the local library. What are these people? This is where conservatives are really stupid. They do not understand that the world has moved on from public libraries and newspapers of renown and that sort of thing. People just go on the internet now to find stuff. This is an interesting survey. So they're asking, who are the people who are trying to ban books? And this will tell us a whole lot about how it all works and what it is all about. Okay, so here, first of all, share of book censorship attempts in U.S. libraries, schools, and universities in 2020 by the initiator. And again, I got to say quite clearly, I don't have a problem with people keeping certain material away from kids. Right, Ben? None of us are saying that's not a good idea. There's stuff that kids shouldn't see until they're of adult age and consenting as adults to that kind of information. I don't believe that kids should be exposed to porn before they're 18 years old. Under any circumstances, if you can possibly keep it away from them, then do. Because I do think it messes their heads up.
But Gareth, I think on the whole thing about pornography, the senator of Texas, he calls a literature pornography. But essentially, it's not like just opening up and you see double fisting and all that kind of stuff. It's stories basically normalizing how you can do these kind of things. It's basically normalizing grooming. It's normalizing these kind of things in society. That's what they are calling this pornography thing, just to put it clear.
All right. So,
it's one thing seeing a visual, but reading a compelling story about how you should be seeking this kind of behavior, I think, is slightly more dangerous.
All right. So 50% of the people who are advocating for book banning in libraries, schools, and university in 2020 in America are parents. So, you know what? If you're a parent and you want your kid to not be exposed to this kind of thing, then A, raise your kid properly so that they actually have a grip on how the world works and that they're not suddenly confronted by something and it ruins their whole idea of how the world works. Right? Makes sense. So do a better job parenting. And if part of that is parents saying to their local school, hey, I don't want you putting filth and literature that kids shouldn't have into your school library. Good. But I do think, again, they're missing the point because you can't ban this stuff on the internet. It becomes very, very difficult to do that. 20% of the people banning stuff are patrons, which would mean people who actually still go to libraries. I haven't met one of those kind of people for 20 years. I don't know anyone who belongs to a library. I don't have a library card myself, and I love books. So I don't know who these people are. 11% of the board and the administration. And now we start getting to authority. And this is where I become a major cynic and skeptic when it comes to any kind of ban on anything. Because the minute boards and administration or political and religious groups are involved in banning books, then it gets very messy. I don't know who the 10% of other are. But you know what? Banning a book's generally a bad idea. Even worse idea if you think that banning books is going to stop people from finding information out on the internet. Here's another interesting thing. They've banned more than 700 books in Texas. They are the state that has banned the most books. Pennsylvania's next. Florida's next. Then Oklahoma, Kansas, Indiana, Tennessee, Virginia, Missouri, Georgia, then New York. Interestingly enough, it's 12 books.
But exactly. Look at that drop off. 713 for Texas and only 12 for New York. You wouldn't think that with the way that they dealt with certain things recently.
So I don't know. I mean, here's one last chart, and then we can discuss this a little bit. Book challenges on LGBT plus topics soar in the U.S. So apparently, most common reasons for U.S. book bans and challenges are sexual content. Okay, look. Kids have got to find out about this stuff. We used to have, what do they call it, life orientation or guidance or whatever it was called.
Guidance.
At school. Do you remember that? Where there would be some teacher who clearly hadn't had a lot of sex themselves. It was always those ones they chose.
Pretty much
zero. Yeah, they always chose those ones.
Talking about boners.
Yeah, and it was just so gross and uncomfortable and weird and horrible for everybody concerned. But sexual content is a good reason for kids to not be exposed to certain books. And again, this is down to the parents. You raise your kids properly, we're not going to have this problem. Offensive language. Now, I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings here, but you just have to go into any rap song's lyrics. Lizzo put out a brand new song this week called Girls. It's about the stupidest song I've ever heard in my life. But she had to change the word spaz because apparently that's very ableist and is mean and offensive to the physically challenged community or whatever. So every other word in there was pussy and fuck and everything else. So, I mean, start with Lizzo, guys. Banning Huck Finn because there was some racist tropes in there because it was based on like the 1800s. That's a waste of your time. And I don't think any kids in the U.S. are reading Huck Finn, frankly, at the moment. Unsuited to age group is a good reason to keep people away. It's not to ban the book, but to keep them away from that book until they're ready to read it. Religious viewpoint. Hey, if you want to force your religion down someone's throat, go for it. If you don't believe in doing that, go for it. I don't think that it's right that anybody should be indoctrinated into a religious way of thinking for their whole lives. And certainly after they've left their parents' house, they should be able to make all kinds of decisions around religion. But if you believe it's a values thing, sure, then raise your kids that way. LGBT plus content, only a small amount, really, of the book banning is because of that. Violence is a
big... Yeah, but it's on the rise, though, Gareth. It's on the rise. It's on the rise. The alphabet's 14% up.
Yeah. Then they put violence, racism, and the use of illegal substances. Because those three are not really big problems by comparison with the others to parents. To parents, anyway. That's what we're talking about here.
Sure. So I was looking at this, like, on what grounds should a book be banned? Like, if you make it part of the kids' curriculum, a book about Stephen who wanted to be Sally, and basically you're indoctrinating kids into knowing you, if you hate your penis, you just chop it off. I'm speaking in extremes here, obviously. If that is like, if that is what you learn, and you're forced to learn, and you write tests on it, then I can almost see, like, okay, that book should probably not be part of a kid's curriculum / life, therefore take it away / ban it. But if that's not the case, there is no grounds to ban these things, because I don't think people will be reading them. They don't give a toss. They're not going to go around to the library and go, ooh, what can I fill my mind with today? Because as we ascertained in the beginning, they'll just use their phones for that.
Listen, I just hate it when people use kids as the vanguard for any kind of activity. Like, don't
totally.
You?
Totally. It's another great example of this.
Do not use the children. I understand that kids are a very sensitive, delicate part of society, and we need to be careful what we feed them, whether that's, you know, dangerous ideology, whether it's violence, whether it's sexual content. You need to be careful around kids, but don't use kids as your soldiers in an argument where you want to ban books, or where you want to change the direction of society, or you want to do something dramatic. Do not use children. I can't respect that. And I'm tired of people going, but the kids, when it's actually got nothing to do with the kids. They're actually just against it themselves as adults, and they will stoop so low as to use the children as an excuse to get what they want politically. I think that's appalling.
Totally.
That's really appalling. If you're a parent who does that instead of raising your kids properly, well, then fuck you. We're not banning anything because of you.
Yeah, and kids are so transient anyway. Transient, sorry, not trans. You know,
some
like
of them are.
When they're 10, when they're 10, by the time they're 11, they've kind of forgotten a lot about stuff. It's a bit like buying them clothes. You don't buy, you know, they'll like something one day and then they'll be gone the next. Mm-hmm. So again, it's just bullshit. Like, as Gord always said, you know, get a real problem. A lot of these politicians, and again, it goes into these political cycles, right? Because they want to be relevant, they want to get reelected. Yeah. So they're making a huge deal about something, and it's just bullshit grandstanding over and over and over again.
So I'm kind of conflicted about this, not in respect of banning books. I've always been against that, and I'm always going to be against that. I do believe that certain things need to come into play when it, you know, has to do with people at a very young age, for example. But whatever content, it can be hateful, horrible shit. People have written terrible things in the past, and they've also written really clever things. And if you think about what the Catholic Church banned, work by Galileo Galilei, which posited outrageously that the sun was in the center of our solar system and not the earth. And he was very nearly burnt at the stake for that by a bunch of people who were religious fanatics. who wanted to ban his book. I mean, thank goodness we still have the writings of Galileo Galilei and so many others, Copernicus. You know, these are the kinds of things that we needed to know. And if people try to ban things, they just go underground.
But Gareth, this is another sort of piece of cancel culture, which just shows you how stupid cancel culture is. We still haven't got the fundamental reaction which should be in place of cancel culture. Dispute, argue, discuss. These things should be what we have as humans, not banning. That impulse reaction of banning something must be taken away from the human psyche. And this is yet another example of how we are failing so dismally at that.
Well, let's bring Brett in, because he's been on the show once or twice before, and he's always got an interesting opinion on these things. Plus, he's got a whole bunch of things he wants to talk about, and we'll get to those in a moment. Hey, Brett, how are you doing, man?
How's it, Gareth? How are you boys doing?
Yeah, good. Hey, good, good. How are you doing? What's been happening? What did you do with your public holiday, by the way? Anything useful?
Well, I was in the. It's not that interesting. It's a really long story, but it's not that interesting for public radio.
Okay, well, should we leave it?
I went to buy a TV.
You went to buy a TV?
I'm moving house.
No, hold on.
I'm moving house.
Because you didn't have a TV license, right?
And do not have a TV license.
I don't either.
Well, why not, Brent? It's the right thing to do.
I've heard that. They've said.
I'm still getting messages from this dipshits telling me that if I pay half of my settlement now, I'll only have to pay another half next year. Like, get fucked.
Finally, they're telling us what the right thing to do is. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I was actually, while you boys were talking about that, I was wanting to know, did this come up because of Margaret Atwood's Unburnable book?
No, I don't know anything about that. Margaret Atwood, of course, is the famous author of that that book, which was like about these extreme right-wing religious fundamentalists who put women in like red dresses and forced them to have children against their will. Handmaid's Tale, that's what it's called. So she's famously that author. Yeah, what happened with her?
Sorry for interrupting you there. Yeah, so she, I think it was, I'm going to get the publication house wrong, unfortunately, but I think it was Random House, and they worked with her on creating, because one of her books, The Handmaid's Tale, has been banned numerous times in the States and around the world, a number of her other books as well, which are, she's a great author. And so they did this project where they made an unburnable version of The Handmaid's Tale. And there's a really cool promo video of her with this massive blowtorch, blowtorching this copy. And of course the flames are not destroying it. And then they auctioned it off for a free speech organization. And it pulled in $130,000. I thought that was really cool. And on topic
that's
of your guys' conversation.
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't read The Handmaid's Tale. I know that a lot has been made of it by political actors and institutions. And, you know, there are a lot of people who are very upset about The Handmaid's Tale because it kind of paints religious fundamentalists in a bad light, like their own actions haven't for 100 fucking years or 1,000 years or more. But Margaret Atwood herself, I have to say, if she was alive in the 1600s, would have been burnt at the stake. This is what she looks like. And you know what people used to do in the 1600s? Any woman who looked like that would definitely be called a witch and would have been put on the funeral pyre, right?
Wait till you put a blowtorch in her hand. Then you really see some witchery. It's beautiful. Just this old lady. Amazing.
All right. So,
but I'm interested in what you guys are talking about.
What do you think of book bans? I think it's just such a stupid thing. It's like talking about what we're going to do with gramophone records in the year 2022. We've so moved on from the idea of book burning. Now what people do is they cancel each other online, right?
I think it's an extremely difficult position. I think it makes no sense to ban books. I think also it needs to come down to the education given by society that will guide people into having quote unquote right thinking.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing you can do about it. You guys have already said about the internet, so we're going to be exposed to it. So we need to educate ourselves and our youth. I hate that thing as well.
Yeah, I know. People talk
into
like
a
that.
Healthy. Yeah, just to have healthy views. You know, I was even a little bit interested in what you guys said about, you know, like sexual content kids shouldn't be exposed to that. And I was just wondering, you know, if they're going to be exposed to it, sure. Let's not encourage that they're exposed to pornographic writing and or visuals. but we need to like have more education. Like I never got taught about sex from my parents, not because my parents were oppressed or anything, but that's just what happened. And I think we need a lot more of that conversation amongst our youth to make it less taboo and weird, because then you can assess it better. It's all evil.
Yeah, it's so difficult.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't believe yeah, it's anyone's job to teach anyone else's child about sex. You know, it's just like, it's tough. And of course, there are kids who grow up now who don't have parents, who don't have both parents around them. Who teaches them? And if they're going to learn from their friends, they're going to learn terrible things, right?
Well, I mean, ultimately, sex should not be taught by the Catholic Church or Kevin Spacey, because I think, you know, if they're the ones teaching you about sex, life's going to be uphill from there.
Oh, my God. Yeah, listen, I don't know the answer to that question, but I'm just glad it's not my problem to deal with because I don't have kids. It's so difficult, such a complex place. And of course, they're going to encounter this stuff. It's not like you can put them in a hermetically sealed envelope and the kid only learns about sex at 18. I think that would be weird. I think there are a lot of weird people who only find out about sex even later than that and who are a disaster to themselves and to society. But who should decide? It's not me. I'm not.
Maybe that puppy. Maybe that puppy should decide.
Yeah, it's a cute puppy, hey? Isn't this a cute puppy? So sweet.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Adorable. What's his name, Gareth?
Alice. I'm keeping her on my lap because otherwise she chews things around the studio. She's been behaving herself for the last few weeks, but suddenly she's got to the stage where she thinks everything is chewable. So what can you do? All right. I don't want to talk about how people should raise their kids because none of the three of us have kids. So what the hell's the point of that, right? And how are we going to have any insights that are worth sharing? what I do want to talk about is something that was on your agenda for this morning, Brett. And I've been watching the Obi-Wan TV series. I know Ben has turned completely against Star Wars from being a big Star Wars fan. He's decided that it's horse shit because he found some other author who wrote Dune, and Ben thinks Dune is superior to Star Wars.
Some other author? You've got no respect. Other author. The original author of the best sci-fi story ever created in humanity is the actual way you describe Frank Herbert.
Whatever.
But carry on.
Whatever. So Disney's milking this whole Star Wars thing because they bought it for like billions of dollars, right? They have to make their money back somehow. So they've got Ewan McGregor coming in here. They've brought Darth Vader back from, you know, the original series. So this is a period after the first three episodes. And Vader is kind of still interesting at this point. And they're bringing in a whole lot of new characters. And there's a huge pushback by some of the Star Wars fans about some of the characters. And we don't have to get into that this morning. But what are you enjoying about it, or what are you not liking about it, Brett? Because you're the one who brought this up.
Oh, man. I'm just loving them giving me what I want, you know. I want to see Darth Vader.
Yeah.
I want to see, you know, how he came about. I want to see that in between spaces, between the episodes.
Right.
I think they've done it beautifully. I thought Hayden Christensen in the last episode looked very funny with the CGI.
I haven't seen it yet, so don't spoil it for me.
Apologies, I won't. Then what did I enjoy about it? Yeah. The pretty pictures, Gareth.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
It's beautiful. And they're milking it. You're right. They are milking it. But I think they're doing it well.
They so fucked up that the last three movies, right? They really screwed those up. The ones with Rey and the rest of these characters. It was just so vapid. And they took people like Luke Skywalker and Han Solo and Leia, frankly, and they just turned them into these weak milksop characters that, you know, in the original Star Wars, these were our heroes. And they turned them into these really pathetic old people in the last three movies, and those directors should never be allowed to direct movies ever again. They're just absolutely shit. And then they did bring out, to their credit, they brought out that Rogue One, which was actually pretty good, and frankly the Mandalorian's been pretty good. So I'm happy with where it's at the moment. I'm kind of with you on this.
I think it could be much worse.
Gareth, have you ever been to one of those sort of like new money areas or like a hastily put together golf estate? You'll see someone who's built a structure and then they've built an add-on and an add-on, and then that little bit over there is purple, and then this bit over there has got like its own fence. This is what happens when you don't have a plan, right?
Yeah.
And George Lucas never had a plan. He had characters that he put together, which kind of worked at a time where coincidentally people wanted sci-fi, they didn't want army movies anymore. And this is what we've got, unfortunately. We've got Disney now milking these withered teats of a story. And basically, what they're going to do is that they bring it back together with pretty pictures, which Brett just confirmed. So this is why, you know, it was always going to run into some roadblocks, unfortunately, because there wasn't a good structural story from Lucas's side. It was just, it's just well packaged sci-fi, and that's all it is. And one day you'll admit that, Gareth, and then we can have this conversation again like adults.
Well, Corona's Boring says, Ben, did you watch the director's cut of Dune? They had an extra 3 hours and 12 minutes of really large spaceships landing and taking off really, really slowly.
Can't wait. Amazing.
Have you seen the new episode of Dune, Ben?
No, I've only watched the movie that came out last year.
Right.
Oh, that's what I meant. Sorry. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Brett,
I just lost you there for a second.
No, we both did. Say that again.
Oh, shit.
I think Brett's frozen.
I just thought it was awful.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have not heard me.
Go ahead. Sorry. No, we can hear you now. Go on.
I just thought it was really slow and disappointing.
You're just breaking up there a bit. You said it was the greatest sci-fi movie you've ever seen. I agree. You know, I think basically it was just like the character structures. It was more believable. There was more urgency. I totally agree with you. I just think that, you know, it can go somewhere now. There was plot lines that I really enjoyed.
More urgency? Yeah. What urgency?
No. See, someone is...
Yeah, unfortunately, he keeps breaking up, so I'll finish what he's saying. You know, it's really great how there was this real family dynamic, and then there was an actual force, not that Star Wars was playing around with.
Yeah.
I mean, look, Gareth, you don't need me to go on about it as well, and Brett to go on about it.
Yeah,
it's
all right.
Better than Star Wars. We can draw the line.
Okay, great. Oh, my God. I'm going to try and get Brett back on here, because while he was there, it was fun. Oh, there you are. Okay, now I think we've reset the connection, so you should be all right for now. What's this bullshit about turning...
It's okay, Brett.
Brett, what's this bullshit about turning urine into beer?
Oh, wow. It's
interesting
so crazy.
Segue.
I mean, yeah, it's a nice change. It's in Singapore. So Singapore have been cleaning their liquid products, so urine, etc., stormwater drains,
yeah,
and turning it into what they call new water.
Oh, God.
So when they do that in South Africa and other countries, they turn it into like non-potable water for like cleaning roads and stuff, but they're actually turning it into drinking water in Singapore.
Okay.
And they're turning that, using that water to make beer. I mean, it's a little bit of a, you know, marketing stunt.
It's not directly urine into beer. They're basically taking wastewater and then they're using it for all kinds of things, and one of those things is beer. Ay, ay, ay. Not very appetizing as a thought, though. I mean, it doesn't help that beer is the color of urine in any case, right?
No, it doesn't help. And you know what? I think maybe it's just all these stunts are interesting and it's a PR-able thing, but I think it's an interesting PR-able thing to like promote the recycling of water to actually make it usable. And, you know, I think that's probably important, but I think it's just a stunt. They've got a whole bunch of influencers saying how good it is.
I have to tell you, I think like a lot of the environmental stuff is just a stunt. I think so much of it is just plain. It doesn't make a fucking difference at all. If you're a huge power station like Modupi or Kusile out in Mpumalanga and you see how much shit they're pouring into the atmosphere, you and I could drive 100 kilometers less every week. We could separate our rubbish. We could use less electricity. We could switch off everything in the house that we're not using all the time and be absolutely militant about it. And we wouldn't make a dent in the amount of damage that those big power stations are doing. We wouldn't make a dent. As it is, they shut down periodically and we don't get electricity anyway. So we're almost forced to try and be good environmental warriors. And it makes zero difference. I think a lot of this stuff is just pure virtue signaling. And a lot of the environmental lobby is about like unattainable goals. In other words, they don't specify what we actually have to do. They're like, you must try really hard. Our carbon footprint's too high. Use less of this. Use more of that. Don't eat that. Eat more of this. But they don't give you an end goal. Like, what's the point? Do we want to develop into a civilization where, I don't know, we go back to agrarian stuff like, you know, Gandhi wanted to do in India, for example, where we abandon all technology and we go back to the land? Is that what they're looking for? Are they looking for just less use of everything? In which case, Don't expect the economy to grow.
Yes.
What's the goal? Like,
that's it.
I don't know what you're working towards here. This environmental lobby throws all these things at us and makes us feel bad about being alive and using electricity and eating meat, but they don't tell us what we should do and why we should do it. You know what I mean?
Wow, that why is really interesting, Gareth. You know, I suppose it's like a lot of being told what to do things. Like, tell me why I'm doing it and I'll most likely do it. I mean, we know, make it cleaner, but I don't know, when I was told to clean my room, I was like, cool, I'm going to shove things under the bed.
Correct.
Then it's clean, right? So right. That's what we're doing now. We're doing something.
That's a great analogy.
No, I mean, this environmental lobby also, you know, it's kind of like the racism thing, because there's never going to be a point where we don't have any racists. There's always going to be a couple of racists hiding under a rock somewhere, right? They're always going to be like people who are Chinese factories, for example, are not going to stop producing huge amounts of carbon emissions because they're busy making all the shit that we buy in the rest of the world. They're not going to stop. So when you put an unattainable goal in people's way, like you say, we've got to defeat racism, or we must shut down all carbon emissions so we can regenerate the planet or whatever, you're essentially just creating something which is unattainable. So people keep working towards it. It's almost like the religious impulse. You know, God creates you sick and commands you to be well. You know that the essence of sadomasochism, it's basically that you are diseased and I'm going to command you against nature to be well. It's an unattainable goal. It puts people in a position where they're constantly chasing something that they can't catch. And it's not good. This is not good for our mental health. It's not good for any of these causes either, because it makes them seem like they're chasing things that are just not necessary.
Wow, that was depressing as hell. You're right.
No, but I mean, why put something in your list of things I'm going to do today if you're not even sure what the result is and whether or not the result's going to be good for you? Why bother? And that's what's unfortunately happened with the environmental lobby. It's happened with a lot of causes in the world. You know, people
there's a lot of big lies that are going out there. Yeah. I don't know if you saw what happened with Deutsche Bank and with FIFA last week. So there's this greenwashing lobby who have been on the attack against companies that are lying about their greenness. Mm-hmm. And in particular was FIFA with Qatar, because what Qatar did is that they said that their stadiums were all carbon neutral. But what they did was they analyzed the value of the stadium over its entire lifespan. And those stadiums are going to fall into disrepair instantly after the World Cup and are not going to be utilized. So it's an entire lie, and they continue to lie to us. You know, it's one thing to tell us we need to do things, we need to recycle, we need to do that. But we are having huge, massive organizations who have all the power not listening and actively betraying all of us. So I don't know what they expect from us.
That's interesting. I mean, Ben, you've spoken about like the World Cup and Qatar. We spoke about it years ago when they won the bid. I mean, this is just not a country that's honest about anything. In fact, they've been using slave labor in effect from the beginning here. They're just exploiting the hell out of this. Apparently now the World Cup's only happening later in the year because it's too hot in July and August. Usually it's always in July and August. Is that right?
Well, exactly. World Cups have to accommodate international seasons, so they are in the European summers traditionally. But this one's going to be end of year because it's the one time in the desert where you don't actually melt into the floor. And all of these stadiums basically are air conditioning units that they're creating. So there was all these really cool stories of like, they're all modular, okay? So we're going to build it and then we're going to break it down and then we're going to give it to Africa because Africa's poor. No. I mean, we all know the FIFA stadium like palaver. None of these stadiums work unless it's like in Munich and then Bayern use the stadium. Like in Brazil, they sold all those stadiums. They are now infested by like rodents and semi-tropical plants and things. People don't use these kind of things. It's all absolute horseshit. And the thing about Qatar is they've been very smart. They've been sport washing themselves, which the Saudis are trying to do hard. You know, like last week we spoke about that whole live golf thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
these guys are doing the absolute most they can do to sport wash their countries. And Qatar is on the end of the cycle of that because no one talks about the human rights violations there anymore. Mm. No one talks about these kind of things because they are so down the path. You know, Saudi will be there in 5 years. You won't even know who Khashoggi is after the fourth running of this tournament and Dustin Johnson wins it. Like, Jamal, what? Does he play golf? No, I don't care.
Yeah, right.
the sport washing going on is worrying, huh? It's really worrying. But, Formula One as well.
I really believe that FIFA kind of started the sport washing, and it was Uncle Sepp again, one of the most visionary leaders of modern life. He started sport washing because he knew there was massive margin in it. Yeah. It's like, hey, you countries with lots of money, you're dodgy as fuck. That means you should use this thing called football.
Yeah.
Wow, Ben, that's interesting perspective.
It's true, though.
Yeah, it's kind of true. And you know, even this week, that dodgy old fuck, Sepp Blatter,
he's still alive.
He hasn't gone to prison. He's not done anything. He was given a fine or a suspended sentence this week.
Like, oh, yeah?
After all of the back and forth, him and Michel Platini, who had these dodgy deals where Sepp was giving him backhanders and then other people were like playing along, they've been given suspended slap on the wrist kind of thing. So, yeah, that's the end of that. Sport has washed countries and money's changed hands.
I think this is where cancel culture has developed from. I think it's because of this, because we have all these enormous politicians and business people who are beyond the law, and we are watching them in front of our eyes betray us. And so we start lowering our standards towards finding somebody that we can attack, and we can blame, and we can put in a prison. So like, cool, we can't put Sepp Blatter or Jacob Zuma into prison. We can't put the Guptas into prison, probably. So we're going to fire this oak over here who said something nasty, what he shouldn't have said. But, you know, I think that's how it comes, because we are facilitating the success of these things. We are facilitating FIFA. We are facilitating Formula One because we want the World Cup. And I think it's very sad watching these guys.
Yeah, totally. But it's such a good point, because people always go to like the sort of more attainable kind of thing. Like whenever there's a domestic, if there's a domestic cheating scenario, okay, where the husband's definitely fucks some other like side chick, who gets the major brunt of it? The woman, because she's defenseless and she's easier to fight.
Of course.
It's like, well, you asked for it. You obviously were doing this. You obviously doing that.
Right.
Because they're easier targets. I totally agree with you. I think that's exactly what cancel culture is. We wish we could take on bigger things, but unfortunately, the guy on Instagram who said something mean or dispirited, we'll take him on because, you know, we can cancel him. Hooray.
Absolutely.
We're disempowered, man.
Yeah. You go for the lowest hanging fruit, because also the person, the aggressor in all of these situations is actually quite weak too. So they're not going to go after like governments or major corporations and things, because God knows they'll lose those battles, right? So instead they just go after their friends on Instagram. It's so pathetic. It's really, really bad. I just want to throw this in quickly and see what you guys have to say about this, because there's quite a lot on the agenda this morning. And by the way, we want to hear from you. Just drop us a comment in the YouTube comments if you want us to throw in some other things that might be on your mind this morning. We want to hear from you. But I love this. This is an actual story from the Daily News of Hungary. The 78-year-old mayor who married a girl 60 years his junior shared his secret. And there's a picture of this old codger with two bottles of what looked like white spirits in his hand. Now,
is that his secret? Is he holding the secret?
I think that's what he's holding. But let's just do the maths here. So he's 78 minus 60. He's dating.
18, Gareth.
He's dating. 18. I know. He's dating an 18-year-old. This is very concerning that this horrible-looking old man, this dodgy-as-fuck, grizzly old, gnarled grandfather, great-grandfather, whatever he might be, is dating an 18-year-old, and he's holding two bottles of white spirit, and this is a perfectly acceptable headline in Hungary. What do we make of this?
Well, he's the mayor. He's the mayor of the town.
Yes, so he's a respectable person in that town.
Well, Hungary is a total right-wing conservative nightmare, right? It's like the worst of the worst in the States. So they have got a baseline of like wealth, you know, there's grass in the wicket, I reckon. It's a mess. Wow.
Jesus.
Talk about abuse of power here.
Yeah. I mean,
sorry, I'm 42 years old, so I've heard some terminology in my life.
He's a mayor.
But also, like, the story is, it's like, what's his secret? As in, he's basically trying to sell the story he's still desirable.
Yes.
Dude, it's not a secret. It's just absolutely perverse and disgusting. It's not as, it's like saying 72-year-old man finishes marathon in record time. Then you ask the guy what his secret is. Enslaving some 18-year-old with probably poor liquor and, like, giving her dad, like, $100. That's not a secret. That's a... That's an absolutely diabolical strategy.
Is he literally saying it's the booze? Is that what they're saying?
I haven't read the rest of the article. I was so put off by the headline. And of course, my subscription to Hungary Daily is I only get to read the first five stories. Yeah, I don't get to read past story number six or seven. So can't really tell you. But who cares what his secret is? We know it's something revolting.
Disgraceful.
And probably exploitative. All right.
I mean, if you're old, you want to go live in that town, though. Let's be honest. If you're 70 and down, you're like...
Yeah, it sounds like a good place. But then how is that any different? You know, we talk about a 60-year age gap, and that's pretty extreme. But how is it really any different from people who are living among us in South Africa who've, like, bought a Russian bride or, you know, they hire, like, mahoshas from a poorer part of town and they call themselves blessers? How is that any different? Because
the power structure, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't think so. I think this is just how humans have always behaved. Like, there are some, and it tends to be men who do this more than women, although there are women who are very, very rich and hire good-looking young men to be their companions at a cost. And how is that any different from the blesser society that we've got going on here? Because that's a big part of South Africa. You know, if you want airtime, you got to sometimes suck a dick.
You know what? It's funny. There's a person in the comments there. You know, you're talking about blaming the wrong person.
Yeah.
He says, "I think she's the gold digger."
What?
She's 18 years old, bro. She's 18 years old.
I think she's the gold digger.
Give her a break. Are you crazy?
Wow.
He's literally blaming the person who's under the abusive relationship for being in the abusive relationship. This is the world we live in.
Well, I also don't know how it works in Hungary, because I think in Hungary, I think if you're 14, you've already got two kids. I could be wrong. But maybe, you know, maybe the mayor is traditionally, there's a festival. Maybe it's like the Hungarian reed dance, where if you can down a bottle of cheap vodka and you're still standing, you get to marry the mayor.
It's also a really sexually exploitative country, Hungary. Well, as far as
it's like Ukraine, yeah.
But I'm saying every country, people probably look at us with our blessee situation. They probably look at us and say that's an exploitative country. I mean, are we any better? You know, you see these guys in very fancy cars with fat government tenders in their back pocket, and they're unattractive, they're out of shape, and they've got some beautiful woman whose whole business is extracting money from him because she's hot and young and attractive, and she pretends to love him for as long as it takes for her to get the cash that she needs. I don't see how that's necessarily any different to the situation in a, you know, Ukraine, where you send your eldest daughter to South Africa to strip in a strip club. It's the same thing, if you ask me. I mean, they are consenting adults. We're not talking here about, you know, a kid being exploited, which is obviously different.
You know, what is, at least we know we don't necessarily know, but we hope that in a blesser relationship that there's some sort of a contractual happening, right? You know, cool, you know, you're my young person and I'm going to give you this money and I support you and la la la, pay for your education. And then, but this, you know, 78-year-old mayor in a Hungarian village, probably, what is he providing? You know, he's providing
booze.
White spirit.
That's what
he's providing. You know, at least this person is in a Camps Bay, you know.
No, they're not. No. A lot of blessees in South Africa are really doing it. Yeah. I was joking for airtime, but honestly, that's what's happening. So how's that any different? White spirits may be a better option than airtime. At least you can numb yourself before the 78-year-old climbs on top of you. It's just gross. Carl says, also,
I love the way we ended that story on our own accord.
How the fuck is this guy still a mayor at 78? What are you talking about? Joe Biden is president of the United States and he's 78. What are you talking about? There are a lot of old people who's just way past their sell-by date. Can we just agree, like the three of us this morning, and it'll become law, obviously, because we're powerful like that. Can we just agree?
And we're white dudes.
Well, what does that matter? We're having a conversation.
Don't impose your
whiteness on us. I want to say that we should have a maximum age. You know how we have a minimum age for certain things? Like, you can't have a gun, drive a car, vote, unless you're over 18. I think there should be a maximum age at which you just aren't allowed to run for public office anymore. And I'm not being ageist, because I do think that, you know, there are people who are a good 78 and there are people who are a bad 78. But I think once you get to like your late 70s, you can't have your finger on the important buttons anymore because you're just, your reflexes are very slow. You just aren't as mentally agile as you might have been in your 50s, 40s, 30s. I just think there's got to be a maximum age for this stuff. And I don't think that's hugely controversial. Do you?
No, not the slightest. If you look, if you are paying attention in life, we eventually become parents to our parents because they become quite adult and slow, and they're not as smart as they used to be. So if there's a minimum age, the movie Benjamin Button also taught us this. There's a reason there's a minimum age because you're not capable of doing something.
Yeah.
When you get old, your regression is the same as your very stunted pregression. Like it's both sides, you know, like sunrise and sunset have the same kind of light, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing. Once you get to an edge, sorry, you're done.
Yeah.
You're not entirely sure when you're going to make a poo next. You can't be trusted.
Yeah, you can't. If you can't be trusted to make a poo at the right time, then I'm sorry. We can't let you be in charge of the nuclear codes.
So what's the age?
That's the hard thing, right? How do you determine that age? I mean, do we do tests on people?
Well,
do we put you in
front? And also, you know, women tend to be, you know, more agile.
Yeah,
women at an older age, so maybe they get to 70, but dudes get to 65 or something like that.
Yeah,
I was going to go 70-75.
You reckon
75? Eh? Wow, that's quite old.
You we're not, by the way, we're not banning people from doing normal things. We're not going to stop you from doing your shopping. I mean, we're not going to stop you from driving a car. Even there might be arguments for that, but that's not what we're talking about. I'm just saying, important public office like that creepy old mayor in Hungary. Or Joe Biden. I just think you can't be in your late 70s and be making important decisions for other people. You can make all the decisions you want for yourself. No one's going to get in the way of that. No one should ever tell you at any age to make decisions for yourself. Obvious exceptions being when you're a very small child and you're in your parents' care. And if you've completely lost control of your bowels or your mind at some advanced age. But if you're healthy and you're not under duress, you should be making your own decisions. I'm talking about people who have to make decisions for the rest of us. Like, should you be a lawmaker if you're in your late 70s? I don't think so. I think those people they come from a generation that is so far removed from the technological one that we're living in now that these are the kind of people who want to do book bans, to go back to where we started this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you two sound like you're really thrilled by this.
No. I was waiting for Brett to say something. I just think if somebody has a minimum age, like driving a car or drinking or whatever these things are, you must apply a maximum age to it because I'm tired of these old fucks fucking everything up. And I think everyone is.
If you look at the States, right, it'd be interesting to consider, old what's-his-face, the orange guy, he was really old. And now Biden was 78 when he was elected.
Yeah. Biden's the oldest man ever to be a president. And
Biden
wants to run again. Biden wants to run again, which means in 2 years, he will be, I think he'll be 82 by then. And that means if he wins, he will retire from the presidency at age 86. Now, there's just no way that should be a good thing for anyone. Already, he sounds like he's half off and half on. He's very confused. His speech is often garbled. He starts shouting at people like a cranky old man a lot of the time. Ben, are you waving at your cat?
Yeah, she's literally right above me, yelling at me.
You know, that's a really interesting point you were making, Gareth, because I was looking at stats recently around the... Oh, hi, kitty cat.
Look at that.
Wow, that is very cute.
That is cute.
She's just judging me from a high.
Sorry, Brett, you were saying...
Is the average... I was looking when the Russians invaded Ukraine. I was looking at, for reasons, the average age of governments around the world. And I think the Ukraine was averaged at 38. That was the average age of their government. That's, not after everybody got, killed, but before that. So they were already they're already advanced nation with all the technology and with philosophy and thinking. And then the oldest nations are Germany, America, England. And these are the nations controlling the planet somewhat,
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see what happens when all of these old fuckers start dying. Because the vast swathes of the government just start disappearing, then who's going to take over? The TikTokers are going to take over.
Oh, Jesus. God help us.
God, no.
By the way, you wanted to say, and we've got like a few minutes left of this, and if you're wondering where George is, he's not going to be joining us this morning, everybody. So if you were concerned that George was not here yet, he's not joining us today. I think he's on an extended long weekend.
Too old.
But you wanted to talk about...
Unfortunately, George is too old.
You wanted to talk about these reaction channels on YouTube, you know, where people like react to stuff, and you don't watch what they're actually watching. You watch them and their reaction to it.
Yeah. I love those things, man. I really, really love it. Maybe it's just because I'm an old bachelor, but like, you know, it's nice to have friends. And sometimes my friends are the people laughing at the same things I'm laughing at on the TV. I really think it's the, I think it's the future of commentary.
Yeah.
I think it's the future of sport commentary. I think it might even be the future of just TV show commentary. But I think TV shows are going to need to start releasing a reaction channel along with it, with people that they've hired who watch along with you, so that you can enjoy it with others. The first one I ever watched was this guy called Hip Hop Head Reacts to Rage Against the Machine for the first time. And you know, guys, is that not the greatest moment in somebody's life? You know, like when I first heard that, I wish I had a camera on me when I first heard that seminal album, you know, like, and now you're getting to watch other people experience things for the first time. And it's beautiful.
I get
really
that.
Cool.
I saw a guy who's a big watch fanatic reacting to like Pharrell Williams showing off various watches on TV appearances that he's been on. A really cool, like, and he's an interesting dude. Like, he knows a lot about the watches, but there's a very serious like element of just sheer joy and excitement that you get out of watching his reaction videos. But the other thing I love is these unboxing videos. And obviously it's only if you care about what's actually in the box. But someone sent me a clip of someone opening up some sound equipment. Like a mixing desk and stuff. And this woman just, like, she takes this little scalpel and she, like, opens up the plastic covering. Then she very carefully folds it open, pulls out this beautiful piece of equipment, and she shows you different angles of it. That's very cool stuff. I don't have a problem with that. Ben, you look like you don't care about this at all.
No, especially if you're poor, because you can't buy it. So you watch, it's like watching porn. No, but that whole reaction thing, it's really great. It's not going to really take off in sport, unfortunately, because people swear and you can't broadcast it. But if you look at like the guy who obviously is the greatest on YouTube, Mr. Beast, this guy spent his entire life working out what works.
Yeah.
So he has like the main channel, and then he's got all his videos translated into Spanish. And then he's got, because he just knows that he can basically get all the eyeballs in the world. This is the guy who basically puts all the money back into his videos. So he recently made his own chocolate factory to recreate the whole thing. And one of his channels is actually just pure reaction videos. So him and his staff, all they do is every single one of the videos is them reacting. And it is super smart how this guy just gets everything right on YouTube because he's dedicated his life to it.
Wow. That's pretty cool. Great.
I could spend a couple of hours just talking about YouTube stuff, to be honest.
Me too.
How much time?
It's the absolute greatest thing.
How much time do you reckon you spend on YouTube in a given week?
A week? I'd rather do a day because that would be easier to work out.
Easily 2 hours a day.
Oh, easily. Wow. I mean, I think I'll probably spend 35, 40 minutes in the morning, then maybe another 30 minutes before I go to bed, and then during the day, quite a few hours.
Wow.
It's a lot of it's research. But research lands up, you know, rabbit-holing.
Listen, again, to go back to the library analogy that we were talking about earlier, This is having access to the world's greatest library. And if it's reaction videos, how's that different from reading a fiction book? Some fiction is good, some fiction is bad. It's all in the eye of the beholder. And if this is the stuff that makes your day happy and puts a smile on your face, go for it. Also, you may learn some really amazing things while you're on YouTube. I don't look down with intellectual snobbery on people who learn things by video as opposed to people who read books. There's nothing superior about someone who listens. That's changing the world, dude. Yeah, I mean, someone who reads a book or someone who listens to an audiobook, I don't really draw a distinction between them.
Well, I mean, the way education is changing is remarkable. You know, the perspective that people have on education and educating themselves has changed so dramatically with the advent of YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, in the past, you know, you had to go and study something and intentionally go do something.
Right.
Now people are watching a 15-minute video, practicing it, doing it, becoming adept at it. Boom. Next thing.
And you see people who can play the guitar after watching like a couple of YouTube videos. I think that's phenomenal. I just want to wrap it up because we've already got to 8 o'clock. This has been a lot of fun. And Brett, it's been nice having you on as well. And Ben, I think that this is something we should all install in our houses because obviously it's going to be a really big magnet to attract people to us. It's a cock fountain. Someone put this up.
Oh, I've been looking for one of those.
Someone put this up in a town square in, I think, Belgium. And it's
Hungary, definitely Hungary.
You think it's Hungary? You think it's that mayor who we saw earlier?
Little town.
It's like
that's a girthy dong. Hey, there's a secret right there.
Yeah, it's a big, big horse cock fountain.
It might just be a shower, not a grower. You don't know what that's going to, you know.
That's actually Kevin Spacey's house. A friend of mine in Cape Town went there. No, that's Kevin Spacey's house.
That guy's going to pass out.
So there it is. There's what you finish your Friday with, is a cock fountain. Aren't you glad you listened to our show this morning? You learn things here you won't even learn on YouTube. All right, Brett, have a happy day. Ben, have a great day. Everybody, have an awesome weekend. We will see you on Monday, 6 a.m. bright and early. Enjoy your Friday. Cheers, everybody.
Bye, guys. Cliffcentral.com.